Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Whenever there is unselfish love, that is its style. The reservoir of love derives pleasure when the lovable object is pleased. When the pleasure of love interferes with the service of Lord Krishna, the devotee becomes angry towards such ecstasy. Purport. As mentioned above, the gopis are the predominated lovers, and Sri Krishna is the predominator, the beloved. The love of the predominated nourishes the love of the predominator. The gopis had no desire for selfish enjoyment. Their feeling of happiness was indirect, for it was dependent on the pleasure of Krishna. Causeless love of Godhead is always so. Such pure love is possible only when the predominated is made happy by the happiness of the predominator. Such unadulterated love is exemplified when the lover deprecates her happiness in service that hinders her from discharging it. The confidential reasons for the Lord's appearance, that is the title of this chapter. And the matters discussed here are truly confidential, not easily understood at all. Rather, the common person would misunderstand these verses to think that here is some description of some mundane love of this world. But Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is taking great pains to explain at length the very pure, transcendental, and unselfish nature of the gopi's love for Krishna. And in the course of this discussion, he mentions another point, another symptom that proves this. And that is mentioned here ultimately in this verse, that the gopis are not interested even in the pleasure or the happiness that comes out of serving Krishna. In fact, they deprecate the very happiness that comes out of service if it interferes with the service. The service is being rendered for the pleasure of Krishna, not for their own pleasure. And if in the course of serving Krishna, not if, certainly when Krishna is served, the devotee experiences great happiness, great pleasure. But if that pleasure that the devotee experiences in serving Krishna interferes with the service, in other words, it interferes with the happiness that Krishna feels, then the devotee deprecates that happiness and doesn't want that happiness. And in the verses that will follow, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami will give examples of such deprecation by other devotees. Now, this selfless love on the spiritual platform, not on the material platform, is being spoken about here. And because externally at least, the love that the gopis have for Krishna resembles ordinary attachment, this, Srila Prabhupada explains in his purports, is sometimes referred to as lust or kama. Especially in the nectar of devotion, we will find this. But then Prabhupada explains that it's only a superficial resemblance. Because it just externally appears like that, it is referred to by this name. But it is completely transcendental. There is not a trace of any selfish interest in this love that the gopis have for Krishna. This selflessness, this idea that one's only happiness is the happiness of the Supreme Lord, is explained nicely by Srila Prabhupada in a purport to the famous verse from the second canto, third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it's probably the 10th verse. Akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradhi tivrena bhakti yogena yajet purusham param. In this verse, it is explained that whether one is akamaha means without material desires, sarvakama, full of material desires, or mokshakama, desirous of attaining impersonal liberation, that is, merging with the impersonal Brahman, one should, with full force, tivrena, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramapurusha. In other words, whether one worships with material desires or without material desires, one is considered udara dhihi. Udara means broad. Dhi means intelligence. So one is considered of broad intelligence if one worships Krishna with or without material desires. Of course, there is a gradation there. We'll come to it in a few moments. So those who don't worship Krishna, therefore, are not considered to be of broad or good intelligence. So what the Bhagavatam says is, doesn't matter you have material desires or no material desires, you want to merge into the Brahman, but just worship Krishna. But then once you worship Krishna, then there are different stages to understand. Obviously, the stage of complete selflessness, no material desires, no selfish desires, is the topmost. And that is the aspiration of the devotees. The devotees want to love Krishna like that, without any trace of selfish desire, no material expectation. So that is akama. And then there is sarvakama. That is usually the fruitive workers who want to take shelter of Krishna to fulfill their material objectives, their sense gratification, gross or subtle. And then there is a mokshakami, those who want to merge into the impersonal. Now, it is interesting. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his comments, explains that why is the word mokshakama used separately apart from sarvakama? Sarvakama means all desires. He says because the Bhagavatam wants to demonstrate that mokshakama is not a state of freedom from material desire. It's not that sarvakama only pertains to the objects of this world, but even if one wants to merge into the impersonal Brahman, it is a selfish desire, because usually such an objective is driven by a desire to be free from the suffering of this material world. One wants to get some relief from the distress of material existence, and one wants to merge into the impersonal Brahman. So even that desire to be free from distress of material existence is a selfish desire from the highest standpoint of pure Krishna consciousness. Now what a high platform that is. Of course, initially when we come to Krishna consciousness, and for a long time after that, we always talk about how the material world is a place of misery and it's better to leave and go back to Goloka. The principle holds, but nevertheless, as we go deeper into bhakti, we begin to understand that it's not only avoiding material distress that is our motivating factor. It is a pleasure of Krishna. So in this way, the moksha kamis, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, are even more full of desire. Therefore, they have been classified after sarvakami. So there is a progression here. The akama, without material desire, are the best. Then there is a sarvakamis, who desire all sorts of sense gratification, gross and subtle, within this world. And finally, there are the mokshakamis, who desire impersonal liberation. The lowest of the three who worship Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada talks at length about this akama spirit. Kama means material desire. Akama means without material desire. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the word akamaha in this verse of the Bhagavatam refers to a pure devotee. And then Prabhupada speaks at length about this akama spirit. He says the material world is full of the kama spirit. And the spiritual world, the Vaikuntha world, is full of the akama spirit. And in the Vaikuntha world, there are also gradations of perfection in the akama spirit. Everywhere in the spiritual world, you will find selfless love for the Supreme Lord. Even when the four-armed form of Narayana is worshipped in the Vaikuntha planets. But then, the perfection of that, or rather, higher than that, is the akama spirit that is found in Krishna Loka. And amongst all the residents of Krishna Loka, the acme, or the supreme perfection of this akama spirit, is found in the gopis of Vraja. So Srila Prabhupada explains, this is the supreme exhibition of the akama spirit that the gopis do, because they have no concern for their own happiness. Their only happiness is the happiness of the Supreme Lord. When they see Krishna happy, then they are happy. Now the perfection of this spirit is seen in the gopis. That is why they are glorified so much. That is why they are considered the greatest devotees. Ramya kachid upasana vrajavadhu vargenaya kalpita. So the most pleasing form of worship of the Supreme Lord is that which has been rendered or is rendered by the gopis of Vrindavan. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas comments about this feature. He says, Bhajaniya Paramapurusha Sukhamatram Swasukhatvam. What this means is, Bhajaniya refers to worshipable, Paramapurusha means the Supreme Lord. Sukhamatram, Sukha means happiness, Matram means only. Swasukhatvam means one's own happiness. So when one's own happiness lies only in, exclusively in, the happiness of the Supreme Lord, that is perfection, the highest stage of perfection. So this is the standard of the gopis' love for Krishna. So we can understand this degree of selflessness is not something ordinarily found. There may be apparently reflections that we find here in this world of such love, but it cannot compare because it is here on the bodily platform in the material world. For the gopis, it is completely on the spiritual platform. So therefore, even when there is some degree of happiness, the gopis are not attached to it. If they find that in the course of experiencing that happiness, the happiness of Krishna could be compromised, then they don't want that happiness. But of course, the transcendental nature of the relationship between Krishna and the gopis is that the happiness of each other, of one, nourishes the other. and it goes on infinitely. And we have seen this in the past few verses. Elsewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Madhya Leela, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains that even amongst the gopis, there is no such envy or selfishness. And the gopis feel 10 million times greater pleasure when they see Srimati Radharani with Krishna than when Krishna is with them. And similarly, Srimati Radharani feels 10 million times greater pleasure when the other gopis are with Krishna. Now, because these are activities on the topmost transcendental platform, one cannot expect to see such things here. Because the relationships here in this world are perverted reflections of those pure relationships. So one shouldn't confuse relationships here with what is being spoken about over here. The gopis of Vrindavan are numerous. The Skanda Purana mentions there are about 3 billion gopis. And they're all serving Krishna in different ways. There are different hierarchies. So the spiritual world is also organized in a very wonderful fashion. Under Srimati Radharani's superintendence, there are different groups of gopis, groups and subgroups and sub-subgroups, and each group has their own leaders, and all is meant ultimately for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. This is the purpose of the spiritual world, to give pleasure to the Lord. And as we go on in this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we will see many, many examples practically of how others live this kind of life. We will have opportunities in our devotional life also for this. Many times we want to do some service because we derive happiness from it. We like it. But if there is need to do something else, then we should be willing to give it up to do that other service, because that is what will please Krishna best. So the practical implications of all this in our day-to-day life is that we keep in mind that while we don't deny the happiness that comes out of devotional service, we are not attached to it. We shouldn't be afraid to be happy in devotional service. If devotional service brings us happiness, that's wonderful. It will, because that's the nature of devotional service. But the point is that tomorrow, if we are required to do something else that apparently doesn't bring us so much happiness, we should be ever willing to do that. So this is the important thing for us. It is service, and it is Krishna's pleasure that is the defining criterion, not our pleasure, not our happiness. Yes, when we first come to devotional service, we need that little extra nourishment, that pleasure for ourselves, so that we understand that there's so much happiness in this. And when we preach to others too, we say, well, there's no happiness in the material world, there's only misery, but come and experience real bliss of Krishna consciousness. So initially, there is that inviting offer we make to people, that come, experience bliss. But then gradually, as the devotees settle in, we start to hear, well, don't be attached to your bliss. Be attached only to Krishna's bliss. Whatever can help us to serve Krishna better, that's what we want. So these are some lessons that we can learn. We're going to stop early today because we have to go for a Rath Yatra somewhere. So we'll stop here for questions. We can have a discussion for about 10 minutes and then we'll end today. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Can you speak up a little bit? Okay, the question is that in the Krishna book it is mentioned that Krishna has 16,108 wives. Is that a restriction or can he have more? No one can restrict Krishna, can they? 16,108 actually refers to his queens at Dwaraka. As far as the gopis are concerned, there's no limit. Even the figure of 3 billion is really just a figure. But for Goloka Vrindavan, there is no limit. Krishna is unlimited, so his gopis are also unlimited. His cowherd boyfriends are unlimited. Everything about Krishna is unlimited. Who can limit Krishna? That is proof that he is God. That he can do all this. And because everything is ultimately an expansion from himself, directly or indirectly. So he's not enjoying anything outside of himself. So there's no fault in that. All right? Yes, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
What is the criteria for developing that selfless mood and how to avoid, let me say, false ego in executing the selfless mood?
Yeah, Maharaj has asked a very important question. How does one develop that selfless mood? And how does one protect oneself from the ego that comes out of being selfless? I'm the most selfless devotee, right? That's the feeling that could come if one becomes selfless. So then that's not selfless anymore. Because now we want something selfish. We want that subtle gratification of the ego. That I am really so selfless. If one is actually selfless, one will also be detached from the selfish desire to feel good or great about one's own selflessness. So yes, at the end of the day, pride is such a thing in this world. It creeps in unexpectedly. And often expectedly, of course, also. At the smallest of things, as the saying in English is, even the pauper is proud of his penny. So even if somebody doesn't have any qualifications, but there is still scope to get proud. And then if somebody is trying to lead a selfless life, how much more scope there is for pride to creep in, that I am so selfless. So indeed, it's a predicament that the devotee has to carefully guard against. How does one develop a selfless spirit? I guess by hearing and practicing and associating. When one constantly hears about selfless love, then gradually one tends to develop that by the power of hearing. If one is constantly hearing about how we must be number one in the world and how we must constantly enjoy this world, then we also start thinking like that. So if we're constantly hearing about how our Krishna consciousness must be selfless, and we hear from the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita and so on, then our thinking and our attitudes also get molded accordingly. And secondly, we practice that. Krishna will give us plenty of opportunities every day in our day-to-day life. And we practice. It may be painful sometimes, but that's the opportunity Krishna is giving us to advance. And then we associate with those who have the selfless spirit. That gives us inspiration. It shows us that what we are talking about is not something just theoretical or up in the air, but there are devotees like this around me, yes, who are living this selfless spirit, or at least they're sincerely aspiring to be in that spirit. So such association can be very inspirational and powerful. And I would say lastly, powerful, sincere prayer through chanting of the holy names and also directly to the deities. The lordships, they hear what we ask for. And these are kinds of supplications or prayers that are legitimate in Krishna consciousness, and they are wanted. In fact, Rupa Goswami mentions prayer in two or three different places amongst his 64 items of sadhana bhakti. So there are different kinds of prayers. So, some prarthanatmika, that's offering feeling, deep felt prayers. And please, we can beg to Krishna for developing these devotional qualities of selflessness or humility or devotion and so on. So I guess it's a combination of these different factors that can help us. And how can we avoid the pride that comes out of being selfless is vigilance. Vigilance is the price for freedom. Freedom from the lower, the baser instincts of this material world, like pride and so on. One has to be constantly vigilant and introspective. That am I really feeling some gratification that I am so selfless? And then we understand. At the same time, we shouldn't let that interfere in the way of our day-to-day activities, otherwise we'd constantly be just dragged down by all this. So we can be positive, we can be enthusiastic, we can be proactive in serving Krishna, but reflective and vigilant to see that unwanted things don't creep in to the heart. Yes. I beg your pardon?
Such as the desire to be
as being. Yes. The desire to be acknowledged as being selfless is also a manifestation of pride. We want to be known. Interestingly, in the Bhagavad Gita, when the 20 characteristics of knowledge are being described, and humility is the first one, Srila Prabhupada in his purport defines humility. Does anyone remember how Prabhupada defines humility here? Correct, absolutely. Not wanting the distinction to be honored by others. That's humility. And the highest honor you can have is, oh, he's so selfless. You can get honored because you're a great billionaire or, a great, cricket player or whatever it is. But to be honored for being completely selfless is way up there. So it's a manifestation of a very deep seated pride. Yeah.
Say
Yes, yes. Yeah. So Chandramouli Maharaj is mentioning how when the gopis got a little proud that Krishna was with them, then Krishna left them. And then they came to realize, oh, we got a little proud, so Krishna left us. And actually, the various prayers of the 10th canto, like the Gopi Geet and so on, are chanted in this period of lamentation when the gopis are thinking, oh, you know, Krishna left us and went. And we became proud. So that, of course, is for teaching us a lesson that we shouldn't be proud that we are Krishna's devotees, or we shouldn't be proud that, you know, we are selflessly devoted to Krishna and so on. Yes, Maharaj, very good point. Thank you, Maharaj. Yes, Vishwambar Prabhu. Okay, the question is that the gopis take pleasure in seeing Radharani with Krishna, but what about Chandravali, who is the gopi, the chief gopi of the rival camp? These are transcendental arrangements to nourish the rasa. Among all the gopis of Krishna, of all the 3 billion that I mentioned, 8 are considered the chief. And this 8 doesn't refer to the Ashtasakhis, but it refers to some of them, but not all of them. And included in this 8 is Chandravali. And among the 8 chief gopis, the 2 chief are Radharani and Chandravali. So this arrangement, she's actually Radharani's cousin. And it's all part of the transcendental arrangement to create that whole rasa, to increase that mellow. Just like this whole thing about apparently the gopis being married and then they leave their husbands to go to be with Krishna. It's all a big transcendental drama that's being enacted to nourish the rasa of devotion. So similarly with Chandravali also. The very purpose of that is to bring about those sentiments. Yes. No, Chandravali doesn't pretend. The sentiments are very real, but it's happening by Krishna's arrangement. That is the way to nourish by... Yes, it's... Probably confirms what we are saying. Yes. Right.
Sometimes in the past things that you would be envious. My question is, why isn't envy counted as one of the rasas? I mean, it's obviously existing in the spiritual world. I don't know how to categorize it. Isn't it any of the primary or secondary rasas? What does it say?
Envy in the spiritual world is not to be found in the sense of envy here. The envy, so-called transcendental envy that sometimes is there, like we have this, so many pastimes in Vrindavan. For those of you who have gone on Vrindavan Parikramas, you must have heard so many of these pastimes. And Narad Muni always plays a role or something. Radharani comes, you know, she's prevented from coming for some reason, and then Lalita Sakhi is induced to sit on the swing with Krishna, and then Radharani comes in late and finds out, and then there's, you know. So these are just to enhance the pastimes. There's not real envy in the sense that we understand it here. The envy, everything in this world is a perverted reflection of the real emotions in the spiritual world. So there, it's in its pure transcendental form. It's also an expression of deep love. It's not the kind of envy that we see here. It's the pure, pristine. Even, for example, Radharani's man or ego. But it's not like the ego that we have here. Because it's false. In Barsana, you will have a man mandir, where Radharani was angry because she was feeling a little proud and angry. So there is this kind of sentiment in the spiritual world, but in the material world it all gets pervertedly reflected. Okay. Thank you very much. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hare Krishna.